Spend less than you earn and invest the difference. We've covered that this is the key to personal finance in just 9 words, but which is more important, spending less or earning more? Both are ways of generating a surplus for investing, and you can do both, and I recommend you do both. But which one is more powerful? Well, one way of looking at this issue is to say spending less is more powerful, because no matter how much you earn, you'll never get ahead if your income always rises to meet your spending, which it often does for people. But, and this is a big but, income generation, if you do everything right, has the power to be way more impactful in the long run than frugality. Hey, it's Matthew, and this is the Matthew Kent Show. So, you know, one of the counterintuitive and interesting things about the book, The Millionaire Next Door, which is one of these personal finance classics, is that the authors mentioned that, you know, obviously the majority of millionaires in America are first-generation wealthy. They didn't inherit their wealth. And of course, most of them who are first-generation wealthy are business owners. They've built a business that's worth a lot, and that's a big part of their income. It's a big part of their net worth, and it's how they become wealthy. And a lot of them don't encourage their children to become entrepreneurs like they were. A lot of them will say, like, hey, you should be a professional. You should be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, something like that. And the reasoning behind this, you know, some of them are immigrants, and, you know, this book was written a while ago, so, you know, they've talked to, like, Holocaust survivors, and I'm sure they've also talked to people who've escaped communism and things of that nature. And, you know, one of the things that they've heard as they did these interviews with these millionaires is, hey, the government can take away your business, but the government can't take away your intellect. So if you learn how to be a lawyer, the government can't take that away from you. They can shut down your business. They can seize, you know, all your assets that the business has, the land, the building, whatever, your inventory, but they can't take the knowledge. So, okay, you know, that seems like a reasonable thing. And of course, we know that these kind of people can make a high income in America. You know, doctors and lawyers and things of that nature. So you say, okay, well, does the strategy pay off? Do the children of the affluent become affluent themselves? And most of the time, the answer is no. So what's the problem here? Well, the problem, as far as the authors can tell, is that growing up in a household where they have money and then being insulated from the real world for so long in school, because if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you have to be in school a long time. You're not going to start your career, you know, until your mid or maybe even late 20s or maybe even early 30s. And then when you get into your career, by the way, you know, you're going to be the bottom of the totem pole. So you're eventually going to earn a lot of money, but at first you're maybe not going to earn as much, although you'll be around a lot of people who are earning a bunch and spending a bunch. What happens is these people never develop their frugality muscles. They see people spending. They know that their parents have money. They expect to live this sort of middle class or upper middle class lifestyle, and that's the lifestyle they associate with these professional fields. But they don't start earning that income until, you know, much later. So the consumption is always fighting throughout their 20s to exceed their actual means, and they don't live below their means. And then the increases in income they enjoy are basically, you know, already earmarked to fuel either consumption that's already been happening or consumption that they've planned on happening as soon as they can afford it. So definitely, if you want to get ahead, it makes sense to start with frugality. And that's why, you know, on this podcast and, you know, in my blog, moneythesimpleway.com, I recommend, hey, start with frugality. Because you got to start working out those frugality muscles somehow. You know, when you think about it, all self-help, all personal finance, which is just, like, I guess, a form of self-help or self-improvement or whatever you want to say, it all revolves around this idea that if you want to get ahead, if you want to succeed, if you, whatever your term, your preferred term is, you need to willingly do things that are hard or that you don't want to do. And so, you know, I'd love to tell you, like, you know, you could just indulge every desire you've ever had and just become rich beyond your wildest dreams and none of it will take any effort, right? Because you're not doing any frugality, and then earning money won't take any effort at all, and it'll just, you know, life will be, you know, you'll live a life of ease, and it'll just be you know, pie in the sky. I mean, I would love to tell you that it's not true. There's no way around it. It's not true. And so absolutely, I think the place that you should start is with frugality. But it's worth thinking about the fact that frugality, in the long run, if you address frugality sufficiently and then you turn to income generation, there's a good chance that income generation will be the more powerful strategy in the long run. And the most concise way I have of saying this is there's no limit to how much you can earn. So just very simple thought experiment here. Let's say you're making $50,000 a year after taxes. And let's also just say that you're spending $50,000 a year after taxes. So you're making ends meet, barely, like just exactly you're making ends meet. You have the amount that you're earning is exactly equal to the amount that you're spending over a given time period. We're talking about, you know, spending less than you earn and investing the difference so that, you know, you're basically, by spending less than you earn, you're trying to create this surplus for investing. And in this situation, the biggest surplus you can generate through frugality alone, right, not through making more, but just through cutting costs, is $50,000. Because if you're only spending $50,000 a year, that's as much as you can save. And here's the key. That's only if you could literally reduce your spending to $0 a year. So good luck with that. And, you know, if you can do that, great. But boy, that's hard to do in a society where, you know, literally money is the currency with which we interact with each other. I mean, you know, maybe go off in a farm in North Dakota somewhere and, you know, homestead and live off the land. But I mean, you do you. That's not for me. So basically the way we can state this is that at any given level of spending, the additional amount that you can generate as a surplus, you know, to provide you with a margin of safety and to provide you with fuel for investing, is 100% of your spending. At any given time, 100% of your spending is the maximum that you can save by cutting costs. So how much could you save if your spending stays the same and you grow your income? And I'll just interject here. You know, when we talk about frugality, we're almost always talking about cutting costs. And I mean, that's a sensible way to think about it. One way to think about frugality, though, is fighting the urge. Because like I mentioned, almost everybody who, the natural way things work is that when somebody gets a raise, they spend it all. So you can say spending basically always rises to match the level of income. That's sort of like the default. If you, with no intervention, if more money comes in, more money is going to go out. That's how the world works. That's how human psychology works. That's the path of least resistance. That's just the way of the world. We're going to take that as a given. So basically, maintaining a constant level of spending requires some level of frugality. Now, also, I mean, it requires, you know, systems that you can put in place. So for instance, you know, if you buy a house instead of renting, which may or may not be the right choice for you, but you know, when you rent, your housing costs can go up. And like we've covered in the last episode, that's your biggest cost. You know, if you buy a house, then your biggest cost is basically, it's become a fixed expense. And, you know, I mean, the bank can't just say, well, we've decided to charge you more on your mortgage just because we, you know, I mean, there's contracts, there's things in place, there's documents you've signed, all that kind of stuff. So, but I would say that in general, keeping your spending constant does require the use of frugality. So in some sense, it's not even like you can just increase your income without focusing on frugality at all. You can focus on income generation without cutting costs at all, but you're going to need to exercise some level of frugality no matter what. But let's think about what happens if you do keep your spending the same as you grow your income. So we mentioned the most you could ever possibly save if you're making and spending $50,000 a year is $50,000 if you just focus on frugality, right? So, you know, you cut your cost to zero, you're still making $50,000, but now you're spending zero and your annual surplus is $50,000. Well, how would you get that through income generation? Well, you keep your spending at $50,000 and you double your income to $100,000. So now you've created a surplus of $50,000. Now you might be objecting, well, hey, it is not easy to double your income from $50,000 to $100,000. I mean, if it were, everyone would do it. I completely agree with you. We just said nothing is easy. Here's the deal. I promise you, with 100% certainty, I am very, 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 very confident about this. It might not be easy to double your income from $50,000 to $100,000 a year, but it is way easier than reducing your spending to zero. It's not even close. I mean, like, lots of people have doubled their income from $50,000 to $100,000 a year. I don't know anybody. I have no anecdotes. I have no stories to share of people who have gone to spending zero. Have a few people at least done this? Maybe. And that's awesome and great for them. But which one is harder? Spending zero is harder. So, and of course, like we mentioned, with the fact that how much you earn is basically uncapped, I mean, yeah, you could double your income from $50,000 to $100,000. You could also triple your income to from $50,000 to $150,000. You could quadruple it to $200,000. The top 1%, last time I checked, and it was on one of these, you know, CNBC.com calculators or something like that. The top 1% by income in America makes somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 a year. So people are making that kind of money. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's like pro athletes and stuff, and you can't be a pro athlete. I'm sorry about that. Making millions of dollars a year and things of that nature. But, I mean, a lot of the people who are making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know, it's not like that, you know, genetic lottery thing. It's you know, they've built a business that does it, or they're a professional that does it, or they, you know, find a lucrative side hustle that turns into a full-time gig, or there's lots of conditions that can result in this $400,000 to $500,000 a year. And even if you fall short of that, right? I mean, it's possible to double your income. And even if it's not, I mean, it's certainly possible to make lots more than you're making right now. But when we think about it, it's not just the fact that one's uncapped and the other's capped. This is what we're going to talk about after the ad break. One of the critical things that's very important to think about is it's the fact that one gains momentum as you keep going and the other one runs out of steam. So let's take a quick break for a word from the sponsors, and then we'll come back and unpack that idea. So here's the difference between cutting costs and earning more that I really want to hit on. Frugality is subject to diminishing returns, and income generation can experience exponential gains. So here's the way I think it's best to think about it. If you start to save money by cutting costs, you're going to look in the most obvious places and find the easiest areas to cut back on. And again, like we covered two episodes ago, I think the easiest place to win, or the easiest place to look, is in the things that you're spending on routinely. And just, you know, you've got these payments that come out of your debit card or your bank account, and it's just, you know, you're paying them on autopilot. And so it's your internet and it's your cell phone and it's these kind of things. Cut those costs. Again, we talked about the big wins last time, and, you know, save money on the biggest areas. But eventually you're going to run out of, you know, big wins and quick wins. And all that's going to be left is just disciplining yourself to save more money. And it becomes harder. It becomes harder and harder, right? I mean, you know, even if you want to, like, let's say, cut your grocery bill, you know, the first several interventions or hacks that you use are going to cut your grocery bill down, but you're not going to cut your grocery bill down to zero. So what's going to end up happening is that, you know, let's say lowering it from $100 a week to $90 a week is pretty doable. But then lowering it from $90 to $85 a week is even harder than going from $100 to $90. Like, every step along the way becomes more difficult. So, I mean, it's going to get harder and harder and harder as you go on. Now, that's not actually a bad thing. And if you need to keep cutting costs for whatever reason, you know, one of the benefits that cutting costs have is that I say frugality is faster. And I say that because I like alliteration. But, you know, you can save money right away. It takes time. We're going to talk about that to earn money. But, you know, if you need to save, go ahead. But if it's a question of what's the best way to spend your life energy, what's the best return on investment, you know, you can argue that it's better, you know, to get the low-hanging fruit from the land of frugality and then to switch gears to something that can experience exponential gains. So, you know, the way I think about this, and on moneythesimpleway.com, if you go to one of the core posts of that blog, so if you go to start here, you'll be able to find it as one of the first ones listed, is earning more the simple way. And I have some nice charts that basically show this, so it's easier sometimes to look at this visually. But, you know, if we go back and we assume that you're doing the making $50,000 a year and spending $50,000 a year thing, what we'd see is that if you tried to cut costs, you know, the line is going to go down the most, and we graphed it, you know, so you have time on the x-axis and you have the amount of spending on the y-axis. The diminishing returns means that the line is going to go down the most that first time period that you try to cut your costs. And then the line's going to kind of level off, right? So it's going to kind of dip and then level off. That's what diminishing returns look like. What exponential gains look like is, you know, we've all seen that J curve, and it kind of gets started real slow and it doesn't even look like it's going up. And then something happens and it starts to like turn a corner, and then it's almost like it keeps turning a corner and it keeps, you know, curving upward and upward. And this can happen with income generation. So let's, one way that this can happen, you know, it's important to remember that oftentimes in the land of income generation, in the land of making more money, wins now lead to future wins down the line. So imagine that you go and you negotiate a $10,000 raise at work. Just assume you have a regular 9-to-5 day job. You go and you negotiate a $10,000 raise. Well, what often happens is they'll give you yearly cost of living raises. Maybe let's say like 3% of your salary or something like that. Well, what happens if you were making $50,000 a year and now you're making $60,000 a year? Well, I mean, the really nice thing is, you know, 3% of $60,000 is higher than 3% of $50,000. And if you keep staying at that same company, you know, then the next year you're making 3% more and you get another 3% raise on top of that. And so, you know, that is a form of compounding, and these things grow. Now, I mean, of course, eventually, and it depends on where you work and it depends on how valuable they think you are, and it depends on what role you have and how much responsibility you have, because eventually some companies, you know, depending if you're like a lower level employee, they'll start capping you, and they'll say you're just not eligible for raises anymore because we're paying you like three times as much as all the other people who are doing the same kind of job that you're doing, which, I mean, fair enough. But, you know, so to some extent, you can't just, you know, get those raises. You know, you have to actually either get a promotion or take on more responsibility or do something different. But I mean, fair enough. Like, if they're going to pay you more, you should be doing more. I think it's interesting to think about, though, you know, right? We obviously know that these things are possible. But what is sort of the benefit? So let's imagine again, and I use $50,000 a year because I think the median income last I checked a while ago, it was $50,000 a year. Now I think it's closer to $60,000 a year for a household, median household income. And so let's just assume, you know, there's taxes, there's other stuff that comes off your paycheck before you ever see it. And so, you know, median of $50,000, and it's a nice easy number to work with. Some of you listening might be making less than that. Some of you listening might be making more than that. In fact, if it really is the median, that's the way it should be if this audience is representative of the general population. I know, you know, it's international listeners and stuff, but certainly for the U.S., half of all people, maybe let's say making less than $50,000 a year after taxes and about half making more, you know, realistically speaking, what's the best you could hope to do with frugality? Well, as a case study, I would submit a guy who goes by the moniker Mr. Money Mustache, which is a glorious moniker, both for the triple alliteration and for the fact that he somehow got the word mustache into there, which is a glorious word. Like, wow. But this guy, his name is Pete Adney. He a very famous personal finance blog, MrMoneyMustache.com, and very frugal. So, I mean, this guy is just like a DIY master, do-it-yourself, you know, build your own radiator and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, gets around for the most part without a car. I'm not sure how that's changed, but certainly during the time that he was doing his super frugal thing, he was doing that. You know, $1 per person per meal, which is like the gold standard of frugality when it comes to food. Just a very, very, very frugal guy. He had, I think he's divorced now. He had a wife and a son. He still has the son. So during the time that he was becoming popular and building this blog, and during the time certainly that he actually, I don't think his son had been born up until he retired. So he got famous for retiring at like age 30, age 32, something like that, and writing a blog about it at MrMoneyMustache.com. And I don't think his son was born during his career. I think he waited till he retired to have kids, which is one of the things he recommends to people, like, wait till you're retired to have kids, which obviously does not work unless you retire very early, which, of course, then is what he's advocating. You should retire very, very, very early. So anyways, you know, he's supporting a wife and one kid, and he had a, you know, pretty good salary. But what was their spending? This hyper-frugal family. From what he says, and I think he's had a couple posts where he's you know, broken it down, is roughly between $20,000 and $25,000 a year. So I'm going to use the upper end of that range just because, like, I'm going to assume that most people can't be as frugal as Mr. Money Mustache. So if you focus on only frugality, sort of, I think the upper bounds would be about $25,000 a year that you can cut costs by if you're starting at, you know, $50,000 of spending. Now, I mean, this is heavily dependent on your own situation. If you live in a high cost of living area, or if you have a big family, right? I've got a family of five, so I've got a wife and three kids that I'm supporting. And $25,000, I mean, I think last year we spent something like $40,000. That might have been 2 years ago. I haven't looked at it as closely because, you know, it's sort of on autopilot right now, and like we're just kind of, you know, every time I check in on our spending, it's like an acceptable level, which is nice. I haven't had to do like any like, you know, we got to cut our costs here, or any interventions, anything like that in a while. But I think about $40,000 ish, and you know, I'm fully expecting that number to start to creep up to $50,000 a year. And just one of them is, you know, as the kids get older, they eat more, especially right now. The biggest transition, I think, I might be wrong about this, is like from infant and newborn to toddler, because it goes from like they're just drinking mama's milk to like, oh my gosh, they're eating food, and they eat a shocking and disgusting amount of food. Oh my gosh, my daughter ate so much food the other day. It was unbelievable. Every time I toss, you know, my little girl up in the air, my wife is like, stop it, she might retch. Which is a good point, because she eats a ton of food. Now, she's never retched yet, and I'm a good dad, but I mean, good dads toss their daughters in the air. But anyways, yeah, it's a fair point by my wife. But so yeah, I mean, you know, $25,000, and you know, again, maybe higher than that. You know, maybe if you've got a big family, maybe $40,000 is sort of the lower limit. And even for a lot of people, you know, you might be listening to that, you might be like, that's lower than I could imagine. Some of you might be like, well, hey, you know, you are a spendthrift and you're out there, you know, spending all kinds of money, because I'm stuck making less than that. And sure, we could get into that all day of the comparison game. But I'm just trying to paint the picture that's realistic for the most people, knowing that there's all kinds of exceptions out there. So if you put it that way, you know, we're not even talking now about doubling your income to $50,000. We're talking about, like, in order to generate an increase in income that is more impactful in absolute terms than cutting costs, basically your target, if you're one of these people who are making the median income, is roughly $25,000 a year, right? So if you would have gone from $50,000 a year in spending to $25,000 a year in spending, then the basically the equivalent of that is to go from $50,000 a year in income to $75,000 a year in income. So that doesn't sound too bad. I mean, I still think you should have lofty goals, like, you know, doubling your income, even whatever it is. Like, you could be making $100,000 a year right now, $125,000 a year, and I'd say, you know, it's worth thinking about how to double that. But I think that's the sort of math that we need to keep in mind. So in subsequent episodes, we're going to talk about some more specific ways to increase your income. Right now, I just want to hit on what I think are the two most important qualities in increasing your income. And so those would be courage and perseverance. You can maybe, you know, call perseverance something else. You could maybe call it faith. I'm not sure what's best here, but here's the bottom line. However you're going to look to increase your income, probably nothing's going to happen right away. So you start trying to make more money and you don't make any more money. You're working more or, you know, doing something. And eventually it pays off. There's no guarantees. It might not pay off. And so, you know, good examples of this would be this podcast and my blog, moneythesimpleway.com. I might not ever make any money for moneythesimpleway.com. Hopefully I will. I think I will. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing it, certainly. The nice thing is, even if I don't make any money off of it, you know, I think it's still going to be helpful for a lot of people. I unpack a lot of really good concepts in there. I'm really proud of some of the posts that I've put. I posted something the other day about asset allocation. This was yesterday. And, you know, some of my posts are like to try to get traffic from Google. Like, I'm targeting keywords and doing that kind of thing. Some of them are basically like, here's what I think are some of the, you know, key core principles that we're going to build on. And then some of them I'm like, man, this one is for the nerds. And I mean that in the best possible way. Like, man, if I showed this to somebody who was just, you know, giving me advice of like, hey, here's what you should do to have a successful blog, they'd be like, this is not a good post. This sucks. It's too long. It's too technical. There's too many charts and graphs and bits of data. And I'm like, exactly, exactly. This was so much fun to write. It's so helpful to the right person who wants this information, because it's the information that this is the post I wish I had when I was learning about that particular topic of asset allocation. And, you know, I just unapologetically will put that out into the world. This one's for the nerds. But I mean, you know, there's no guarantee that the work that you do is gonna pay off. You know, you could angle for a raise at work or a promotion, and you might not get it. Now, I think ultimately, you know, if you're trying to advance in your career, and you're networking and you're being responsible and you're taking on projects and, you know, you're doing all these things and you're growing in your skills and your value to the company, you will. It might not be on the timeline that you want. It might not be the way that you want it to happen. But I mean, that's the way things work. Is, you know, good things will happen. Again, just the thing is, you know, it's the courage to do something and to fail or to be seen failing, because it's almost a guarantee that in working to generate extra income, you're going to have failures, or at least things that look like failure, and they might just be, you know, stumbling stones along the way. It's just part of the journey. It's part of the process. And so the person who has courage is able to face these and to say, you know what? Okay, I don't mind that. I don't mind going into that meeting with my boss and asking for a raise and not getting it. I'm going to try it anyway. I don't mind starting a blog that might not make any money and working at it, you know, unpaid for a long time. Like, I'm going to do that. And the thing is, you know, I mean, the nice thing is it's perseverance is a way of, because it's one of these things like, why doesn't everybody achieve the goals that they want to achieve? And you can say, well, competition's a big reason. And fair enough. Okay, so, you know, there's not enough raises out there for everybody to get the raise that they want. 100% true. But then you factor in perseverance. And you say, well, okay, the people that do get it, like what happens to them? Do they just beat out the competition because they're better? Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's just because they're better. But sometimes it's just attrition, right? Sometimes it's like they're the ones who keep angling for it, keep persisting, keep coming on saying, hey, what do I have to do to get that raise, to get that promotion, to make more money? And other people stop, you know, they don't keep the pedal to the metal in the same way. Pedal to the metal. That is a weird phrase to say in American English, where we so often slur our T's and our D's. Anyways, they don't keep the pedal to the metal, and they eventually just this sort of give up and start coasting. Well, you know, some people who persist end up getting what they want. And, you know, obviously I'm hoping that this is the way things go for me with, you know, the podcast, the blog, that I'm just going to keep showing up and that eventually, right, you know, success will come. There's no guarantees with these things. So you're living on faith, you know, you're applying perseverance, you're applying courage. It's a lot of courage to publish a podcast episode, to publish a blog post. I realize that I could be ridiculed a million ways for any given episode I put out. You could rake me over the coals for the pedal metal mishap from like 30 seconds ago. But I mean, just the bottom line is, you know, if you have courage, you don't care. You say, you know what? Some of these bad things that I'm imagining might happen, and, you know, I'm just going to have to live with that. So it's worth thinking about the different, you know, sort of ways that you can grow your income. And again, one of them is advancing in your career, and it's raises and promotions or getting a new job, getting a better job. You can negotiate a raise, all these kind of things. Another is, you know, you start freelancing and you know, selling your goods and services on the side. You know, entrepreneurship is sort of this idea of building something that's bigger than yourself, and something that can make you money when you sleep, and whether that involves hiring other people or, you know, sort of the blogging stuff is more about, hey, put this up and monetize it with ads or affiliate links or sell your own products or something like that. But the system just starts running itself once the flywheel gets spinning. But you know, the nice thing is, again, in the time that we live in, it's the barriers are much lower to doing something that generates income. I mean, you could get online right now and you could start like an arbitrage side hustle, right? You could start buying things that you find for cheap and selling them somewhere else, right? So you buy them off of Craigslist or get them off for free off of Craigslist, and then sell them on eBay or on Amazon or wherever. So I mean, the options out there are almost limitless. The discipline and the courage to just start something and to keep moving forward with it is what's rare, right? The opportunity is not rare. The opportunity is ubiquitous. Everybody's got it. But the thing I think that's going to set people apart is the people who get started. They have the courage to get started, even if though it's not perfect, and they have the ability to discipline themselves, to persevere, even when things are tough. So listen, courage, faith, perseverance. I think these are the most important qualities when it comes to increasing your income. And increasing your income can be extremely, extremely powerful. So we're going to spend a few more weeks on it in this podcast, a couple more episodes about increasing your income and some of the practical ways to do that. And then we're going to jump to a topic that I personally love, which is that of investing. So be sure to stay tuned. If you like this episode, make sure to, you know, tell somebody about it who you think would benefit. And I will see you next time.